Chapter 7, Section 2 podcast. Question number one, pretty simple answer. Immigrants were drawn to the cities because that's where the jobs were. Some of the immigrants, with a little bit more means, or depending on where they came from, came here to farm, and they were able to make their way out here to the prairie, or make their way to Iowa or Wisconsin or somewhere and become farmers of some sort. The majority, maybe even the vast majority of those who are coming toward the latter part of the 1800s, 1880s, late 1890s, and early 1900s are going to be industrial workers in the cities because that's what's available and that's what they are able to do because that's all the means by which they have. Okay? And working in the horrible conditions that living in the horrible city conditions we'll talk about in a minute. The Americanization movement, number two, goes back to what we talked about at the end of podcast for section one. With so many people now coming from so many different places, and their means by which to cope is to hold on to their way of doing things, where they can speak their language and practice their religion and eat their foods, etc., and surround themselves with people who are like them, the effort by government and certain private individuals to Americanize these people, to teach them English, to introduce the social customs of the United States, to try to break down this idea of holding on to traditional ways of doing things. And again, it led to some significant conflict at times and some unrest as the Americanization movement and trying to throw these new people into this melting pot and out would come an American is met with some resistance because it's a longer process for people who are coming from the different places with different language and different customs, etc. The problems of the cities should be pretty obvious. I'm sure you've looked at these kinds of things before. They're vastly overcrowded. The living conditions are appalling. These tenement homes, and I'll put a link to a tenement house tour where you can kind of see what the conditions were like and how many, multiple families might have been living in a relatively small apartment with a shift almost with sleeping. If someone worked the late shift, they would sleep early and then change out with somebody who worked the early shift, and those people would sleep at night, and it was pretty chaotic and a lot of disease and a lot of just horrible, almost third world-like living conditions in most of the major cities in this country that didn't have sanitation, that didn't have much in the way of police and fire protection at those particular times. They were just overrun, these cities, and the government, again, was not used to providing on this kind of a scale the types of public services that we now expect local government to provide for us. It was unable to do so to meet the demand early on as these cities grew so much in population, in some cases, almost overnight. From a few tens of thousands of people to hundreds of thousands of people to millions of people in the case of New York City and some of the other major cities. They just can't handle the influx, and therefore there's a lot of problems with crime and with pollution and with foul water and nasty air and, again, people just dumping trash and human waste in the streets and you name it. It would not have been a very pleasant place to live. How did the city deal with those problems? Well, not very well at first. Again, eventually the cities will begin to provide those services, but it's going to take a long, long time in some places for those things to change. Eventually the cities will develop, codes for buildings and start to account for living conditions and the safety of their citizens, but it doesn't happen overnight. Again, the influx of people was just so great in such a short period of time. Look at what's happened in your own town. Think about what happens to Lawrence when the students are here. So you add 25,000 some odd students at KU to an increasingly large population of the city of 95,000 people. Think about the traffic and think about how difficult it is even to get around. And we're talking about 100 and some odd thousand people. Imagine if all of a sudden there were hundreds of thousands of people living in this small place and how much the city's services would be completely, taxed and not be able to provide even basic things to its citizens. So those things were a real problem. Eventually, they began to be resolved somewhat, but it was through government and it was through a lot of private efforts by citizens to improve the situation. And the classic one of those is the answer to question number five. There was a sense that that citizens could do better for some of these people who were coming into the country, and people who had the financial wherewithal or people who could raise money to build these settlement houses, or the YMCA, which could provide places for people to live that were better than the horrible tenement house conditions, began to emerge. And there's a woman, Jane Addams, who's at the forefront of the settlement house movement. These were, you know, basically, you know, kind of like YMCA type places where new people could come in and have a place to live, and where, again, they'd have an opportunity to learn English and do some things that would better suit them in adjusting to an American way of life. And Jane Addams is an incredibly significant figure in aiding these people in the transition to coming to the United States and doing something to assist people to avoid, for some of them, the deplorable living conditions in some of the cities. The Hull House, H-U-L-L, something that she built, was responsible for in Chicago, became kind of an example for this type of arrangement nationwide. She ultimately becomes a Nobel Peace Prize winner in the 1930s, I believe, for all of her efforts to aid people who are coming to these United States from foreign lands. So Jane Addams is a name that you should all be familiar with.